For December 3rd, 2015, it's the Lullabot Podcast. Hey, everybody. It's the Lullabot Podcast, episode 175. I'm Matt Cleave, a senior developer at Lullabot. And alongside me, as always, is Mike Herschel. Hi, Mike.
Hey, everybody.
Mike's a front-end dev at Lullabot, so we got that whole front-end, back-end thing going on.
Yep.
We're going to be talking today about Drupal 8, all of the awesomeness and the freshness that is Drupal 8. We're excited that it's out.
Yep. What's new? When should I build stuff?
I think you should always build stuff.
Good idea.
We have a couple of our fellow Lullabots on the podcast today. First off, we have my favorite Canadian. He's one of the smartest Drupal guys I know. He has commit credit on nearly 70 Drupal projects and his very own Twitter fan page. Andrew Berry, a.k.a. Deviant Integral on Drupal.org.
Hey, this is Andrew.
Woo! And our second guest is the co-author of CCK, Date, Calendar, and a generally awesome person, Karen Stevenson, a.k.a. Karen S. on Drupal.org.
Hey, how are you?
Karen and Andrew, I know recently, have been doing some work with clients, actually talking Drupal 8 already, so I think we have the right people for the job. What's most exciting to you about the new things you're finding in Drupal 8 when you're jumping into client work already?
Well, there's so many things. The first thing that I noticed, I think, was how different it was. And I think a lot of people have said the same thing. It's really, really, really different if you're used to working on earlier versions of Drupal. But then the second thing I would say that as I got into it, the more I get into it, the more I really, really like it. But there is a big learning curve, that's for sure.
Yeah. Andrew, where do you think the learning curve is when you jumped in and started learning?
I guess the one thing I would say that there was basically no learning curve on for me was like the site building experience. Like once you're actually logged into a Drupal 8 site, it's basically like all the stuff that you would have to sort of clean up for a client site to make it really good for them. A lot of that stuff is just there, which was really nice. And there wasn't really learning so much as just like, oh, that finally works a lot better right now. Even some stuff like, you know, the WYSIWYG handling is really strong. And you know, just works. You know, handling fields and content types and all that is pretty good. I think though, where Karen's very right is that when you actually look at the code, that's where it's like it's amazing when you think about it that the front end of Drupal 8 looks like it's so much like what you have in Drupal 7 because basically everything underneath it is totally changed. It's almost a shock when you run into some code which hasn't changed from Drupal 7.
Yeah, and that is actually exactly what I meant. Yeah, the UI, I mean, the experience, if all you're doing is, you know, moving things around in the UI in a browser, it's going to look super familiar. But boy, when you look at the code, it's different.
Yeah, I think for me, the thing about the code was especially because like right now we're still so early into people using Drupal 8. A lot of the documentation online is either from like older releases of Drupal 8 that have changed significantly or just hasn't been done yet. And so with Drupal 7, I remember learning it like the documentation online was how I learned Drupal 7. Whereas with Drupal 8, I'm relying a lot more on the structure of the code and the comments of the code. And I'm spending a lot of time reading like interfaces, strangely enough. Well, maybe not that strange, but like basically like here's how, you know, if you want to create your own custom content type entity, this is how you do it. And you just learn that by reading the interfaces for it. And that's been, you know, it's a lot more familiar for developers coming from other systems, but that's certainly something you got to get used to is for sort of like, where do I go first when I'm trying to figure out how to build something on top of Drupal 8?
Yeah, honest to goodness, object-oriented development in Drupal. Imagine that, right? It's quite
yeah.
the change. It's quite the change.
Now, how is the consistency as far as developing different parts of it? I've heard it said before that although, you know, we're transitioning to object-oriented processes, the consistency across that is a little bit more the same, where if you learn one system, you can kind of develop for various ones within Drupal. Does that make sense, or am I completely off?
I think you're coming at it from the right side there, and that like the once you understand the high level patterns of one system, like mm-hmm. I think the most important pattern I can think of right now for like Drupal 8 is to remember from a code perspective that almost everything has both an interface that basically describes, hey, here's how this object works, and if you're going to work with these types of objects, they need to do these things. And then there's almost always an abstract class, which basically gives you like all the code that you're going to have to write anyways that everyone needs to work with that object. So like when you look at like the storage backend for entities, you know, there's an abstract class which handles all of the basic things for like loading entities and saving entities and all that kind of stuff. And that pattern applies everywhere. Like, you're going to find that pattern in the configuration system, you're going to find that pattern in the entity system, or in basically any other system you're looking at in Drupal. So that side of it certainly applies everywhere, I think.
Yeah, and I think correspondingly, a lot of times it doesn't take a lot of code to make a change, because you just find a class and you extend it, or you implement an interface, or whatever you do. And many times you don't have to do a lot because the base classes are pretty well thought out.
It sounds like you really like the developer experience.
Once I've gotten used to it, yes. But it is, yeah. It did take some getting used to.
I'm pretty happy with what I've been doing so far with it. I mean, a really good example is with one of our clients. We were talking about making it so that when you change a setting on the website, you want to know that someone has gone into your production website and made a change to, you know, one of the configuration settings that an editor or an administrator has access to. And I ended up working on a module to do that, and there's a patch out there to add this functionality in. And I probably spent an hour and a half going through learning how the configuration system was built that way so you could implement the right events to basically detect when configuration is being changed. And it was an hour and a half of reading through code, tracing things through to figure out how all that worked. And then it ended up being like 3 lines of code in a class and 3 lines of code in a services file for the module. And like, that was it. So, you know, I think you'll find a lot of scenarios where like, once you know how something works, the actual code is just incredibly simple. And as we get more and more people doing work on Drupal 8, those examples will be a lot easier to find, because that's the thing right now is everyone's still doing this for the first time. So you don't have a lot of existing code that you can just sort of look at and use that to start your own work with.
Yeah, that's one of the big things is it's hard to find examples for things. Like you know you need to approach a certain thing differently than you've approached it in the past, and you could see maybe a couple different ways that you could approach it, and you're not quite sure yet which way to go. And those things all change.
So as silly as this sounds, one thing that I've really noticed and enjoyed, when I'm building my first Drupal module is how much type hinting and an IDE can help.
Oh.
Because you can, you know, draw your arrow, and then all of a sudden the list of methods that you can use pops up, and you find the one that sounds about right, and chances are you get pretty close. That's something that when I was working in a shop that did some .NET as well, the .NET developers where I was laughing. It's like, yeah, I just, you know, I press period and then I guess and chances are I'm close. And, you know, it's kind of fun being able to do that. So I think that really helped my experience as a developer and being able to learn things and figure out where things are happening, how things can happen, I guess.
Yeah, maybe, Matt, could you explain what type hinting is?
Aren't you supposed to do that? Sure. as I understand it, it's essentially when your code is using a method and it's getting a parameter passed into that method, what type of object that parameter is known to the IDE and to however you have things set up. So then you know what kinds of things can be done to that object. Is that fair? Am I lying too much?
No, I don't think you lied at all there, which is probably a good way to start.
First time for everything.
So the thing that's interesting about that is standard class is gone, in case anybody was feeling bad about missing that. Because now we have real objects.
Yeah, the other thing that's actually really nice about type hinting is it doesn't just give you, like in your IDE, the autocomplete, but it also can tell you if you're calling a method that doesn't exist. So Just today, actually, I was looking at some code, reading through it, and the PHP Storm was like, "Hey, you're calling this method that doesn't exist on that object that you say it is," and without that, you're basically waiting till that particular code path gets run in a web browser, and then an exception gets thrown or a fatal error gets thrown, and everything blows up on you. So you can, by basically telling both PHP and your whatever IDE you're using, this is in no way unique to PHP Storm, these are the things that you're supposed to be working with, you can actually like proactively detect entire classes of bugs, which is a pretty big time saver.
That's awesome.
Mike, how about on the front end side of things? What are you finding you're enjoying in Drupal 8?
I'm so excited about the front end. You know, the fact that Twig got moved into the front end and it was kind of an organic process, from like Jen Lampton and several others is absolutely so cool. I know that at Badcamp they just removed the final theme functions out of Drupal 8, which to me is so awesome. So for those that don't know, if you're developing in Drupal 7, you have to do a lot of logic within PHP to kind of, change your markup. And then you also do a lot of logic within your template files. And in addition to that, you're writing PHP directly within your template files, which can be a security risk if you're, you can drop tables if you wanted to go that route or something like that. Within Twig is a modern markup engine. It's made by the same people that make Symfony, was it Sensio or something like that? And it's very logical. You have your curly brackets and you can do your comments, you can do your for loops, you can do your write out your content, you can drill down into your content a lot easier than you can within PHP template. You don't have to always have devel running and stuff like that. Most of the markup changes are moved directly into the templates, which for anybody that just, primarily knows HTML and markup, that makes everything super, super easy. Something else that I'm super excited about is just like the lack of, BS markup, I have so many screenshots that I would just I would either tweet out or like, rant or show them to people. It's just, 20 levels of nested divs and fields. And, there was this whole community, well, not community, but this whole like various different starter themes and base themes within the Drupal 7 that were just primarily about removing all that crap markup in there. And with Drupal 8, everything is a lot leaner, and it's going to be so awesome, and I'm so excited for it.
But how are developers supposed to be able to write CSS now, Mike?
How are you supposed to write what?
CSS. I mean, don't we need, like, three classes on three different nested divs? And
I know, exactly. I've always been saying if you're not nesting up to six levels deep, you don't have enough specificity. And you want your website to be specific, right? You need specific topics, so you have to make your CSS very specific. And that drives home the message to your end user.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, yeah. So anyone out there that's just using single CSS, BEM or SEM classes or anything, you're doing it wrong. You need to get with the program.
I see you're starting this podcast with a lot of hate mail coming in.
I'm writing, I have this article that I'm kind of writing for Lullabot.com, and it's been sitting there, so I don't know if I'm ever going to finish it, but it's called like how to write, dramatically bad CSS class. And I'm talking about like using like Unicode characters in your CSS class names. And because you can totally do that and it works. And there's Unicode Braille characters. So I have this thing in there that I think is genius, and it says, make your CSS accessible by writing the class names in Braille.
Oh boy.
Well, Jeff Eaton did teach me that I could make the snowman module in Drupal 7. I haven't tried anything with Drupal 8 yet, but good old Unicode characters, UTF-8. Good stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Aren't there bunch of changes with the JavaScript layer too in the front end? Like, isn't there something like, is it jQuery is no longer loaded on every page by default?
Nothing's loaded unless you specifically require it.
Yeah, for anonymous users. Obviously, when you're logged in, like the nav bar and stuff uses it. But it's just kind of static. Well, not static HTML, but just like flat HTML as it comes out. And that's awesome. And then I think you have to specify your libraries and specify it within your themes YAML file. And at that point, you can load jQuery or load with other stuff you need. I know that Modernizer is also included. I don't believe that's enabled on the front end by default either, but I think it is enabled on the back end.
Well, it sounds like there's a lot of great things that we can really start building in Drupal 8, but when should we actually do that? We'll talk about that here after a little bit.
Is this better?
It's senior developer and trainer Blake Hall from Drupalize Me.
Yep.
So I have a question for you. Now that November's over, are you going to shave your beard?
I trimmed it quite a bit yesterday.
There you go.
I took 6 or 7 inches off, actually.
Wow. So decoupling Drupal, huh?
Decoupling Drupal, yep.
What do you think the biggest takeaway from this decoupled Drupal series is?
I think the one thing I really wanted to get across is that decoupling and kind of headless Drupal are sort of these hot buzzwords, but the really key thing is to take a look at your project honestly and decide if it's a good fit for your team. For some smaller projects, it's probably not the right answer because in decoupling, it makes it easier to use some of the latest and greatest front-end tools or frameworks, you know, Angular, React, etc. But you're also throwing away a lot of work that's been done with accessibility and internationalization and some of the other work that the front-end community's been doing all these years in Drupal. So it's not really a decision you should take lightly, and you should definitely make sure that you've got a solid plan before you get started.
Exposing your API in Drupal 8, that sounds like a new modern topic, up to date, huh?
Yeah, I wanted to include at least one Drupal 8 video since Drupal 8 was released just before this series came out. And it's really actually pretty amazing how much you can get done in Drupal 8 without writing a single line of code. In the video, I kind of walk through how the REST server and serialization modules work that come with core, and then take a really quick look at how you can use views to expose JSON. So a lot of the sort of site building of an API you can get done without writing any code, which is pretty cool.
So what do you have coming down the pipe there? What's next?
The team's pretty hard at work on Drupal 8 curriculum. So
nice.
Will and Kyle are working on a series about the configuration management initiative and how to manage configuration synchronization, which is a mouthful. And then Amber, Joe, and I are working on our theming curriculum. But it'll cover everything top to bottom from the new themes that are included in core all the way to Twig and the new render API.
Welcome back to the Lullabot podcast. Before we get started on when to build Drupal 8 sites, I want to talk to Karen about, because Karen, I was looking at the old Lullabot podcast episodes and I found that in January 2007, you're on episode 30 and you were talking. Yeah. And you know what? I listened to it, and you were talking a little bit about accounting, because evidently you used to be an accountant.
That's right.
Yeah, and you were talking about CCK and
remember CCK?
Yeah, and like calendar and date and all that type of stuff.
Yep.
And for those that don't know, Karen wrote a lot of that. And anyway, I just wanted, that's episode 30. If anybody wants to kind of look it up on our website, it's honestly like really, really cool, you know?
So,
since then, Karen, what's your favorite change to Drupal? That's big question. That's a
Ever?
Big question. Ever.
That's a tough one.
Ever. Yeah.
I would probably honestly, even though I didn't work on it, I would say the fields in core was awful big. Views in core was also pretty big.
Cool.
There's obviously lots of other things, but I think both of those really made a huge difference to what you can do with Drupal.
All right. So let's get on to building websites. So Andrew Barry, you were saying that it's time for everybody to start building websites in Drupal 8 right now, no matter what, even if the modules aren't ready. Is that correct?
Yeah. In fact, if you're not building in Drupal 8, you are already behind, and you might as well just give up.
Whoa. We're all doing Drupal 9 here at Lullabot.
But seriously, you know, it's funny because like this is like such a question, and like it's a question that people have been asking for like. It's been asked pretty seriously for about a year now, I think.
Yeah.
And For me, the biggest blocker I had seen towards like launching anything on Drupal 8 was basically waiting for that first release candidate to come out and for the security team to be properly supporting Drupal 8 releases and all that fun stuff. And hey, that's happened now. You know, things are pretty well set up that way, which I think is great. I think a lot of it comes down to sort of like, what do you currently have and what do you need to build as far as whether you're using Drupal 8 or not. Like, if you've got a Drupal 7 site that you've launched within the last year, like, unless it's a very simple website and the sort of thing you can rebuild really quickly and doesn't need a lot of additional contributed modules, or those modules are now part of Drupal 8, like, Drupal 7's perfectly fine. You know, it's not going to be going away. I mean, even now you see people who are asking about the Drupal 6 end of life. And they're asking about that because they still have Drupal 6 sites that are serving their purpose and doing well. You know, if you built a responsive mobile-friendly Drupal 6 site in 2011, say, or, you know, 2010, you know, that website might still be serving you fairly well. And obviously at this point you got to start thinking about what to do, but for Drupal 7, it's there and it works, and it's got a great library of modules and so on. If you're building something brand new, I definitely think you've got to do that investigation into Drupal 8 to see how it's going to fit, and it really comes down to sort of like that contributed module landscape and how much effort you can put into porting those missing modules that your site needs, and figuring out, you know, how much effort that's going to take. And for some organizations, it's going to be a no-brainer. You know, they want to build a website that's going to last the next 5 years. So spending, you know, a quarter of their budget on porting Drupal modules is probably a good payoff for them. But, you know, if you're building a microsite or something that's very ephemeral, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be gone in a year because it won't be relevant anymore, then maybe Drupal 7 is the fast way to go.
So what about, all right, so imagine I'm a big, a medium-sized company. I want to spend, I don't know, $50,000 on a Drupal site. It has some modules that are not yet ported Drupal 8. Do I try that myself, assuming that I don't have any in-house developers and I have that limited budget, or do I build it in D7? I mean, what would you say? I mean, I'm guessing you would be port them, but I mean, what would
you
recommend?
Well, I think at part of the thing is that there's still some of the really core modules that we care about that aren't fully ported to Drupal 8 yet, and like the one thing to keep in mind is like, you know, a week after this goes out, the entire state could change on any of these modules. So, like, you got to do sort of your own investigation as you go. But, like, you know, maybe something that we all consider is just like default in Drupal 7, like Path Auto, it certainly doesn't. I know as of right now, it doesn't have a stable Drupal 8 release.
They've read.
Right. you know, I know there's work going on in a GitHub fork for it, but like, and that might be enough for you. Like the work that they have done might be good enough for your use case, but maybe not. And, you know, getting that finished is not an easy task. You might be able to help with solving some bugs here and there, but you can't shoulder that on your own. And so, you know, that's where maybe if you have the opportunity to, you know, pool resources with other organizations to help pull those things along, that's not a bad way to go. But then again, maybe you just build in Drupal 7 because Path Auto has been stable for years now, and, you know, it's not like it's going to change.
And Drupal 7 isn't dead. So the general association between, I mean, the general feeling with the Drupal community and the way the security team supports things is that Drupal 7 will be supported along with Drupal 8, two major releases at a time. Between the release of 7 and the release of 8, almost 5 years elapsed. And in a business, a lot can happen to your website, to technology in general, in 5 years. So Drupal 7 might still be an option for folks. And that's kind of what Karen said in her article, right? It's a pretty pragmatic thing. It depends. Yep. And I'm referring to her article on lullabot.com that's titled "Between Releases, When Should I Adopt the Newest Version of Drupal?"
Yeah, it's like a matrix, right? It's not a yes or no question. It's sort of a matrix of things. It's, you know, what kind of expertise do you have? Do you have the ability to to fix the things that aren't working. How simple is your site? How complicated is your site? How well will Drupal 8 meet your needs? Now, the thing that you've got to investigate is all the new functionality that's in Drupal 8 that may solve your problems, but not necessarily in the way that you solved them before. But it might, you know, if it's going to solve your problems, it could be a good solution. If you need some really complicated Drupal 7 contrib modules and there's no work done on getting those ported and you're not able to do it, and you're gonna have to go with Drupal 7.
And that might be a third-party library that needs integration or something.
Could be like, anything,
it
yeah.
Could be a massive be like undertaking, things. Depending on what you're trying to do.
Yep.
And so I think
it's not yes or no. It's like this whole matrix of yeses and nos, and then you sort of have to figure out where the bulk of them go.
You know, I think that one of the reasons that Drupal is so popular is just because it is so flexible and it has such a massive contributed module library. I think that I don't think you could go wrong by building a decent site in Drupal 7, because no matter what, you know, 5 years down the line throws at you, Drupal 7 will be able to handle that. I don't know of any use cases right now, and you guys might, you know, have some ideas that I don't, that could be built in Drupal 8 that cannot be built in Drupal 7. Honestly, it would be a lot of the opposite, where there's a lot of things that can be built in Drupal 7 because of all of its modules than can be built in Drupal 8. You know, I think the benefits of going to Drupal 8 is, number one, it's a better user experience, a better developer experience, and, you know, it's a more modern code base. I think there's a huge benefit of that. But from the end user's point of view, from like the people that actually, you know, my mom on her Windows Millennium computer, she's not going to know if it's Drupal 7 or Drupal 8. And Drupal 7 is going to be able to build anything that needs to be built. You know, does anybody disagree with that?
I think there's one area where I would be really hard pressed to build a Drupal 7 site today, and that's if I was building like an intranet or a site that you knew was going to have a ton of authenticated traffic. And it's not to say you can't build those sites in Drupal 7. There's a ton of them out there. But there's some really strong API improvements under the hood in Drupal 8, which basically lets you do higher performance authenticated websites than is really feasible with Drupal 7. The best way to think of it is that, like, in Drupal 7, if you're logged in, almost always that entire page is being generated from scratch, every bit on it. And there are some modules out there which let you do some caching and all that, but it's because it's not part of Drupal 7 itself, not every module supports that way of being integrated. And so you have to do a lot of custom code, and you have a lot of edge cases where all of a sudden you find out that your site is just not performing very well. With Drupal 8, there's this cache tags API underneath, which basically lets you do caching even for authenticated users. And so that might, if you have enough traffic or a tight enough hardware budget, make it worth putting time into porting some of those Drupal 8 modules that aren't ported yet, simply because you're going to be able to serve, you know, so many more people on the same hardware. Now, I mean, the big caveat I see with that is, like, we have a lot of great sort of theoretical benchmarks that people have run when they've been developing the features in Drupal 8, but there aren't a ton of real-world implementations of authenticated traffic Drupal 8 websites that we can point to and just say, well, we know for sure that this works and that there aren't any, you know, serious cases in Drupal 8 that we missed during development. But, I mean, I think I think those edge cases are pretty unlikely to affect most people when they do come up.
The standard argument you end up hearing is, oh yeah, well, I installed Drupal 8 and I put a bunch of nodes on it, and then I ran A/B against it, and then I ran A/B with a cookie, and I did that to Drupal 7, and Drupal 7 like is way better, or perhaps they didn't have page caching on Drupal 7 and they got the other response. So what I'm hearing is that it's complicated, and you may not be able to see that easily, the gains you get performance wise from Drupal 8. True.
Well, in some ways, it actually goes the other way around. Gotcha. In that pretty much everyone runs Drupal 7 with the anonymous page cache turned on, but it's not on by default. So, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, sometimes you're auditing a site and you just, like, look at that and you're like, oh, that's not turned on, and it totally should be. And it's an easy, you know, it's you don't even have to do a deployment necessarily to turn that sort of thing on a basic site. But in Drupal 8, it is turned on by default. In Drupal 8, it actually does a bunch of caching of administrative or admin pages as well. So, you know, there's a lot of wins that you get there for free. But what, you know, Drupal 8 doesn't solve is, you know, maybe you have a view of content for your editors to look at, and it takes that view 10 seconds to load because your SQL query is just that ridiculous that you're building with it. And none of the caching improvements in Drupal 8 are going to solve that initial 10-second load. So, you know, it all sort of comes down to having good performant code in the first place and then just being able to scale it out as you have more traffic.
That makes sense.
Knowing what's going on is important still.
What?
Imagine that. And you know how I can tell what I know is going on with Andrew Barry? I read the Andrew Barry fan page, and I follow it on Twitter.
Oh, my. I can't believe this came up.
It's my way of keeping up with Andrew.
Andrew Barry has a fan page Twitter account, twitter.com/AndrewBarryFan. Right.
I disavow all knowledge of it.
We disavow any knowledge of knowing who started it. So
yeah, we don't have a clue. But let me bring up the actual description of it. Hold on, I had it right here. It says, as I bring it up right here, this is not Andrew Beery's Twitter account. It's just a tribute.
There you have it.
Better be sending your royalties off.
So right now we are at 19 followers for that. So everybody that listens to this podcast, it's Andrew Barry Fan. It's twitter.com/AndrewBarryFan.
All right.
And if you follow that, then we'll know that people are listening to this podcast. So once again, that's twitter.com/AndrewBarryFan.
This is the most ridiculous statistics gathering mechanism ever. I don't need no mix panel.
All right, Karen, I haven't heard from you in a while. Any final thoughts on Drupal 8?
It's worth it. It may be daunting, but it is totally worth it. I am actually really enjoying working in it, and I think everybody else will be too once they get over the hurdle.
Andrew?
Yeah, I mean, I think you will absolutely, like, as a developer, you absolutely will enjoy working with it. And as a site builder, it's great. I mean, we didn't even talk about configuration management. And, like, that's just, like, such an easy win for a site builder to be able to move your configs between your local dev laptop and production. But I think the other thing I would say is, like, you know, if you spend a bunch of time right now and you're learning Drupal 8 stuff and you're getting excited and you want to work on it, and your client projects or your sites that you're working on are still on Drupal 7, and that's just the way it is, there's nothing that can stop you from taking most of the best practices that you learn from Drupal 8 code and using them in the custom code you still have to write for your Drupal 7 sites. You can still do object-oriented coding. You can still do unit testing. You can still use type hinting and all that kind of stuff we were talking about earlier. So, like, there's no, you know, learning about Drupal 8 doesn't mean that what you learn has to stick with Drupal 8. You can actually pretty much apply that to any PHP code you write.
All right, and coming up, Drupal events for the month of December and the month of January. First thing, December 5th, we have DrupalCamp Murcia in Spain.
Nice. I want to go to South Spain in December. Doesn't that sound like fun?
That sounds pretty amazing, although we're both in Florida, so it's not too amazing.
Yeah, okay.
Secondly, December 10th, DrupalCamp Santiago in Chile, and I want to say hi to Beto, who is an organizer for down there. Thirdly, coming up is December 18th, DrupalCamp Siberia, which
bring your jacket.
Yeah, I was thinking, just kind of think the same exact thing.
That's actually the 18th through the 20th, so a couple of good days of Drupal there. Yeah.
Pretty crazy. January 21st, Glad Camp, which is Greater Los Angeles Drupal Camp. That's going to be a big one.
What a nice name.
January 30th, Drupal Camp New Jersey in Princeton.
So at the end of the last podcast, we mentioned that we wanted to have a listener feedback segment. And we're trying to get you guys to get in touch with us. You can call us at 1-877-Lullabot, extension 789, and leave us a message. Leave us a question. You know, is there something you want to know about Drupal or life or perhaps air filters? Let us know. Or you can tweet us at Lullabot or me. I'm Vordude on Twitter, and Mike.
I'm Mike Herschel on Twitter.
Because M. Herschel's some other guy, right?
Yeah, some person in Canada.
We did receive one message on our message line, so let's listen to that right now.
Check, check, check. 1, 2, 3. Hi, guys.
So
call me.
Okay, yeah, so that was me, and I just wanted to confirm that our voicemail line actually did work. So how am I supposed to use views, Mike?
Very carefully.
We have better answers if you have better questions, I promise.